lot nervous, so I want you all to pray for me. I hope that I don't cry, but Larissa, thank you for the tissue. And if I do cry, I hope it's not a really bad, ugly cry. I didn't really know what to speak about when they asked me to speak today. And I sought counsel from Matt, and he wanted me to share a little bit about my faith journey. And I spent a lot of time thinking about that and how I could really kind of condense it in 30 minutes, being a 45-year-old woman. But it all began in Corpus Christi, Texas. That's where I was born. And I must say, I was blessed into an amazing family. And I, church, the love of God, the love of Christ was instilled in me at a very early age. I went to a typical Southern African American Baptist church. I was involved in everything. We were in church all the time. My parents were God-loving, and they loved us to death. They cared for us, and prayer, talking to God, was just something that was just normal in our household. It was something that we just communed together as a family all the time. I had a very blessed childhood. Not to say that it wasn't perfect, that it was perfect, but I had amazing love. And while my parents taught me to depend on God, and I saw their example, as I was preparing for this, I realized that I often just leaned on them. I knew about God. I knew that he was my savior. I knew that he was there for me all the time. But whenever troubles came my way, even up to today, it was my mama and my daddy that I turned to. So blessed that I ended up in this church. And that's when I first started realizing, honestly, that I could depend on other people besides just my mama and my daddy. I came to Houston in 2001. I started working in the district attorney's office as a prosecutor, loved my work, found it very fulfilling, loved helping people. And I left in 2007 to start my own practice. And something was missing. I wanted to be married, desperately. I prayed for marriage. My mom and I would pray for marriage. My friend Kara here would pray for me for marriage. I remember one time I went over to her household, and she had a prayer board. And on her prayer board was, "We're praying as a family for a godly husband." I wanted to be a mother. And I found myself in that stage a lot of women find themselves at. I had a very good career. I was doing well as an attorney. But I was 35, and I saw all of the people around me having children, having families, and I was alone. And then I thought God had answered my prayers. And I married my ex-husband. I have to say it was the most joyful day of my life. My sister laughed because she said, "Keisha, when you walked down the aisle, it was almost like you were skipping." And I was waving to all of my friends. I was so happy. It was amazing. So then I thought, I no longer have to rely on my parents. I have a husband. This is the way that God intends things to be. Man and wife, relying upon each other. But things didn't turn out that way for me. First things, I crossed off my list for a check mark for a husband. Next was a baby. I was told when I was in my 20s that I would not be able to have a child. In fact, one doctor told me that you should start thinking about adoption now. I suffered from intense tumors in my abdomen. I had 3 or 4 surgeries. Every surgery, mom and dad would come down, stay with me, and mom would say, "Keisha, this is not God's plan for you. You're gonna have a baby. I know this. God's gonna bless you with a baby." Had several miscarriages. One miscarriage miscarriage. I ended up in the hospital having to have blood transfusion because I lost so much blood and I was hospitalized. And I just thought, how is this ever going to be? And I must be honest to you, my mom prayed over me in the hospital bed. My husband was not there. My aunts came and prayed over in my hospital bed. My friend Kara came to the hospital. You're going to be a mother. We're praying over your womb. This is going to happen. But for some reason, I always believed in my parents and my parents' prayers, and I thought maybe my prayers weren't as effective. I kind of think my mom has a straight beeline to God. She can just pick up the phone, you know, and be like, God, this is what Keisha needs. And it always somehow happens. Well, 6 months later, I'm at the office, and I tell my secretary, I said, can you go downstairs and get a pregnancy test? She said, okay. Found out in the office that I was pregnant. Having several miscarriages, I was very afraid that the pregnancy would not take, but it did. And I was blessed with a beautiful little girl, Mila. So now I had my baby. The next thing I wanted was just a happy home life. And we all know that that doesn't happen for a lot of people. And going to this church, you see so many happy families, and when you're one of the few people in the pew who's suffering when a marriage is not happy, you can feel alone. But I've since learned that there's no happy house. There's no perfect marriage. We're all suffering with things. About this time, we were living in Maryland, 2015, and our house flooded. I got a call from Steve Rader. And my in-laws, we had 6 feet of water in our house, and we had gone to their house in Maryland, and I didn't know where even to begin to start putting the pieces together. Keisha, do you need help? First response, no. Keisha, do you want to think about this? Do you need help? Yes. The next day, I had about 20 people from South Maine at my house. They came with boxes. They came with markers. Don't touch anything, Keisha. We're going to pack. We're going to show you things and say, this might need to be discarded. Do you want to keep this? We know it's difficult for you. I got through that because of this church. I wouldn't have been able to do that without you. We were relocated. A good friend of mine, her mother, was in the hospital with Alzheimer's, and she called me and she said, my mom's townhome is vacant. Would you like to move into it? And it was a part of town that I wasn't familiar with, but I seized it because the only other option was to live with my in-laws. So I was like, okay. We had a couch, our two beds, and a table. And nothing else. At this point in time, I started realizing my marriage was coming to an end. And I thought, this is the worst timing ever. Ava was about two, and I did not understand why my husband was never home. So I must admit that I did some things I shouldn't have done. I would put Ava to bed, sit in the back patio, and drink wine. Because this is not the way my life was supposed to be. And I was very sad. The only thing, and I'm going to be very respectful of my ex-husband, because he is the father of my child. But the only thing he could say was, Keisha, you're such a good person, but I never should have married you. And he said that for about a year. And I didn't understand why. I went to Target one day, and I was sitting in the parking lot, and something said, email Steve. So I quickly got out my phone, and I sent Pastor Steve an email. My marriage is in crisis. I don't want a divorce. I don't know what to do. can you meet with me? Before I got through the sliding glass doors of Target, I got a phone call from Pastor Steve. Keisha, I'm so sorry. What can I do? Let's meet tomorrow. He met with me and counseled me for weeks. We tried to do couples counseling, but my ex was not interested. I finally realized that there was no way to save my marriage. And my ex, let's just say we were not compatible in a lot of ways, as a spouse and a wife. Husband and wife need to be compatible. And he left. And I remember the day that he left. I was sitting on my couch. And again, I had spoken to my mom who had prayed over me, my sister who had prayed over me. Be strong. And the thing that hurt the most is that as he was moving his things, he was whistling. Because this was a great new start for him. But I was left with the devastating pieces of putting my life back together. This is when I learned I could not depend on my parents. I could only depend on God. And it was really the first time. My parents came down every week for about 6 months. And they live in Corpus Christi. They're in their 70s. They would drive down. They would take Edward out to dinner. My mom really wanted me to put things on the walls to make things happier. Keisha, this is such a depressing place. You need some joy. Remember, we went to World Market, and we were going through the aisles, and she's like, this is a cute lamp, and this is some cute photos, and I could not make it like 5 steps without bawling. I physically could not handle the pain. My mom and my dad in World Market pray for me. Keisha, you have a baby. You have to get this together. My parents left the next day, and it was a Sunday. And my mother-in-law and father-in-law, who's still very close to me, they were very devastated. They call me and check on me all the time. My mother-in-law called and she said, can I have Ara for the day? I said, sure. She came and picked up Ara. And I was heading to South Maine, and I used to be a member a long time ago of Lakewood Church. So I said, I'm going to go to Lakewood. And the only reason I went to Lakewood is because I wanted a prayer partner. So there's a part of the sermon when you come down and you pray. And I just went to this lady, and I said, my marriage is over, and I'm devastated, and I don't know what to do. And she prayed with me. And then I got back in my car. Okay, South Maine. I just needed that prayer. I didn't know how to handle the pain. The next morning, A was talking at this time, and she says to me, are you going to be happy today? And that's when I knew I had to change things. So, the first thing I did was download a copy of my favorite song. And I put it on my mirror. And I read it every day. And we listened to it in the car every day. And I'm going to read the words of it to you. You probably all know it. Letting go of every single dream. I lay each one down at your feet. Every moment of my wandering never changes what you see. I try to win this war, I confess. My hands are weary. I need your rest. Mighty warrior, king of the fight, no matter what I face, you're by my side. When you don't move the mountains, I'm needing you to move. When you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk through. When you don't give the answers, as I cry out to you, I will trust. I will trust. I will trust in you. My daughter knew that song. So we sang it every day on the way to school. I then created a prayer closet. And inside my prayer closet, I put a pillow. I put my Bible. I put scripture. I put a picture of a house. I put a picture of a happy mom and daughter. Every morning I would wake up before she would wake up, and I would sit in that closet and close the door. And I would pray on those things. At that time, I can see how God was moving through my life. Because we had always wanted a house, and we never could accomplish it. We were renting the house in Meyerland. And all of a sudden, my work started exploding. Out of nowhere, I was getting calls, retained case, appointed places. Judges were asking me to do work, and I was making more money than I ever had. So all of a sudden, it seemed possible that maybe I could have this house. I started doing guardian ad litem work, which I think was really crucial to my healing, because I think when you're in pain, one of the best things you can do is give back. When you see other people struggling, especially children, you understand. It gives you some perspective on your pain and your suffering. One particular time, I had to go visit a child in Beeville. And Beeville, Texas is near Corpus Christi. So I dropped my daughter off to Beeville, and to Corpus, and I started traveling to Beeville. And I started crying. Started thinking about my life. And that's when I realized it's not gonna be just you're happy. You have these moments of up and down and up and down. And the tears get less and farther between. The pain gets farther and farther between. But through it all, God was there and I could see it. And I was praying and I was crying, and it was a long drive. And I made a U-turn in the middle of this road, and a car struck me. And it was a hunter, and he was on his way to go dove hunting. So he comes up to my window, "Are you okay?" And I just start crying, and I said, "Sir, I'm so sorry. It's absolutely my fault." He's like, "No, it's okay. Are you okay?" He got out with me, and he stayed with me until DPS got there. And DPS came out there, and they were all worried about me. I hit this car. Everyone's worried about me. He's like, "I'm not filing a claim on this, even though it's a car." He's like, "It's just a car. You're more important." And I could see how God was working through that. All of a sudden, my parents come up. They drove down to Corpus, from Corpus to Beeville to get me. And I could just see he was just so compassionate. Never heard from the man again. Never filed a claim on my insurance. So Avery and I start driving around this area that I'm not familiar with. And I decided I want to purchase a house. So it happens that one of my best friends is a realtor. So she starts showing us houses, and nothing is coming through at all. Everything that I want is more expensive, or there's issues, just nothing is coming through at all. And one particular day, she was showing us houses, and my parents were with us. And after we saw some houses, and after she left us, I'm in the car with my mom and dad. A was asleep in the back seat because it's been a long day, and we see a for sale by owner sign. And it said 4 to 6, and it was like 6:15. My mom said, "Let's stop at this house. Let's stop." And I said, "But it's after the time." I said, "We'll see." So my dad stayed in the car with Ava. We walk up. The people were as nice as can be. And before we entered the house, my mom whispered in my ear, "This is gonna be your house." We hadn't seen anything. At all.
Okay.
So, walk through the house, and I love it. And I call my friend, I want to make an offer on it, but it's over my price range. So I decide to write him a letter. Kind of telling them a little bit about my story and why this would be the perfect house for my family. They kindly call me back and say, "We got your letter, it was very sweet, but this is what we need for the house." Oh well. So Ayla and I started driving by the house every day to pray in front of it. Oh. And they would see us outside. And I would literally park my car, and I would grab her hand in the car seat, and sometimes I'd ask her to pray, And I would pray. And we'd pray for the house, and then we'd go. Sometimes, once we got there, my mom would call. You know, she's on Bluetooth. I'm like, Mama, we're in front of the house. Pray with us. And we'd all pray. My sister would call. We're in front of the house. Pray with us. We'd all pray. We did this for months. Happened to be on vacation. I am looking at HAR, and I see that the house has dropped to exactly what I can afford.
Oh, wow.
Call the best friend. We put an offer in. They accept. They call me, the people, and they say, we are so happy because we believe this house belongs to you.
Oh.
Will you come over? We'd like to throw a party for you and your daughter to introduce you to the neighbor.
Oh, my goodness.
So I come over. All the neighbors were there. The ones that were not there, who could not make it, we walked to their house. We walked around. They showed us. To this day, Wilson and Barbara are some of our dearest friends. I call them. They call and check up on me. I've met their grandkids who have played with Ava. We moved into the house. They left gifts for us. A bottle of champagne for me. A juice box and candy for Ava. I got Chick-fil-A, and Ava and I sat in the empty living room, and we toasted. Because I was finally home. And my mom said, Keisha, told you it was your house. Through all of this, I've learned the practice of gratitude and relying upon faith. Your own faith. I have the faith of great parents, but I had to develop my own conversation with God, my own relationship with God. I will tell you, I still to this day, I get sad, I get lonely, because I like a spouse. I like to have what you call a traditional relationship. And I honestly talk to God as if he's in the car. Father, you know I'm lonely, but you know what my heart desires. Please just give me peace. And if it's your will, bring somebody wonderful in my life. God, I'm nervous about today. I'm scared about making payments next month. Please show me your will. I honestly talk to him as if he's in the seat right next to me. And when I have those moments where I'm like, I wish I had a husband to talk to about what to do, I talk to God as if he's my husband. The other day I was alone. Ava was with her father. And I stopped by Walgreens at about 10 o'clock at night. And I came out to my car, and it was dead. And I didn't know what to do. So I called roadside assistance, and they said, you know, 45 minutes, and I had just been with some friends, and I didn't know what to do, and I said, I wish I had a husband. Well, I do. Father, I'm scared. I'm here by myself. This sucks. What am I going to do? I don't know how to change a tire. And all of a sudden, they thought, call your neighbor. Called my neighbor. He was there in 5 minutes. He changed my tire. He brought his daughter. He said, this is a learning lesson. Both of y'all get out of here. Yeah. And we're all like, this goes here and this goes here. You know, she's 17. She doesn't really have an excuse. I'm 45 and I did not know how to jump a car. But it turned into a teaching lesson. And he was right there. And so I would urge all of you, if you're in a low or if you're struggling with something, to just know that God is there. And also, when you see somebody struggling, you don't have to have the right words to say. I felt sometimes afterwards that people didn't know what to say to me. And sometimes it just is, do you need a hug? I remember Kelly Barsh just came up to me one day and said, do you need a hug? And I said, yes. And she said, I just want you to know I'm on your team, whatever you need. She didn't ask anything else. That's all she said. And it's so interesting, during all of this time, when I was going through this, we were doing renovations of a church, so we were in the chapel, which is so intimate. And I remember, and I don't know who she was or what her name was, we were singing a hymnal, and we were all close, and I just burst out crying. And all she did was grab my hand. That's it. And that's very comforting when you're going through something difficult. But what I want people to know is that God does listen. He does answer prayers. He's answered my prayer. My daughter and I are in a place that I cannot, have never would have envisioned. I'm happier than I've ever been married. We are safe because we're in God's arms. And I feel that every day that I walk through my home. So pray without ceasing. Always pray. Speak and talk like He listens and He hears us because He does. Keep showing up. I didn't stop going to church. I kept on going to Wednesday night service. Sometimes you have to fake it till you make it. I wasn't happy, but I knew one day I would be happy, so I would tell myself, fake it. Smile. Smile at others. You're going to get there. Do for others. That was one of the best things. I would try to find ways that Ava and I could do things for our neighbors. Takes the tension off of yourself. Do for others. But forgive. That's a progress. But I have forgiven. And like they say, it's more for me and it's for my child. I have forgiven. And believe that God does work miracles. Because He does. Every day. Every hug, every pat, every house, every smile, every pastor who calls you immediately. How many pastors do that? Every church members that show up and help you when your house is destroyed. Every friend who puts your prayer petition on their wall. That's a miracle. Speak life into existence. Speak what you want. I spoke into existence. I told God, this is what I want. And I think sometimes we're afraid to do that. We can't ask for stuff. But speak life into existence. And embrace the pain. I had to embrace it to get through it. God doesn't fix all pains. He couldn't fix my marriage. But He does comfort us. And He does hear us. Life is extremely hard for all of us. But He died for us. And He loves us. And you just have to remember that every day. And remember, no matter what happens, that He's there. Another one of my favorite songs that I listen to every day goes like this. And it's by a gospel singer. As soon as I stopped worrying how the story ends, I let go and I let God. Let God have His way. That's when things started changing.
Keisha, thank you for your vulnerability, for your willingness to share your story with us. We are blessed by your openness and your spirit and your presence with us today. Friends, I'm going to follow up with just a couple of questions for Keisha, and then if we've got time, we'll open to questions from the floor. Two things. First, I need to get your mom's phone number when we're done. Just that's kind of an aside. Like to add her to my speed dial. But as I listened to your story, Keisha, I was struck by your perseverance through the midst of pain. And you often reiterated how you found the presence of God in those moments. So tell me, where is God when we experience pain? Where is he? Where was he in your life when you were in the midst of that pain?
From my experience, he was right in the midst of it with me. And I had the blessing of having, so important to have godly friends, godly family around you who reminded me of that, that he had not forgotten me, that he understood the situation, and that he was there with me as I tried to find my way out. And I felt it. And it's like every time someone smiled or helped, I was like, that's God. I couldn't explain anything, like the house, all of these things. It was just, that's God, you know? He was there. There's no other explanation. I knew he was there.
You said multiple times, a church member, Steve Rader, would call you and ask, do you need help? No, really. Do you need help? And then again, there were moments in your life where you realized, I think you even said, I need help.
Right.
How is asking for help a foundational part of your faith experience?
I have, especially in this church, I feel like people want to help. People really do want to help. They just don't know how to help, especially when they see someone in pain. You know, I know people wanted to. I had friends who reached out to me and who smiled, and I knew they wanted to help me, but they didn't know how. And sometimes it's just asking for help, letting down your guard and asking for help, or just saying, how can I help you? But I think people especially are good, and they want to help you through this pain, you know, however they can. Sally wrote me a very beautiful text when she found out. And it was just her reaching out to say, I'm here. I love you. Let me know how I can help, you know? So people want to help, and I just embraced that, and it was me really letting down my guard, right? Letting people in. It wasn't anybody else. You just don't want to share your pain. You don't want to tell people you're vulnerable, that you're crying, that you're hurting. At least I did. It was a pride issue. I guess that's what it was, you know? And I was embarrassed about the situation. It was a lot of emotions, and so, but then I just realized, I'm not going to get through this unless I let people help me. And once people started helping me and covering me with love, then you realize you're not alone. Mm. Because when you go through divorce, it's really lonely, you know?
You mentioned the presence of church family throughout all of this, along with your mom and dad, uh-huh, and other friends. What have you learned about the role of the church family in your life through these experiences?
I will tell you that people always, I get this question a lot as an African-American woman, because I grew up in a traditional black church, right? And I'm hoping that our church gets more diversity. But they're always saying, how is this your church home? How have you fit here? And I always say, I have never experienced the love of God in action than in this church.
Yes.
In action. And that's what sold me. I've been to other churches where they speak about the love of God, but I saw the hands and feet of God moving from the flood to, how many people can say a pastor will call them? It wasn't even 3 minutes. You know, I couldn't even get through the doors of Target. You know, who will call you, who will meet with you, who will put aside his very busy schedule to meet with you. I had people in the children's ministry loving on ARA, asking how they could help, how could they cancel. They were very concerned. Dolores was very concerned about, I met with her, how do we adjust to this? She was very intentional about how she loved on ARA. I saw it. So I knew that this was my church home. It has nothing to do with race. We're all Christians. We all love God. And I saw the hands of God moving in this church. And that's why I joined, and that's why I'm a part of it.
You said, I thought this was profound, you said that you've learned the practice of gratitude. What, does that mean? How is gratitude a practice in your life?
It is something I try to employ every day and teach my child every day. You know, when you are in the mire of pain and why me, you know, I remember my mom said to me one day in a very kind of harsh moment, why not you, Keisha? Why not you? Stop saying why me. You know, it kind of shocked me. I'm like, okay, shouldn't have called this time.
Maybe I don't want to take it back.
But why not me? Why are you so special that this situation wouldn't happen to you? And I'm not. You know? She said, everybody is dealing with something. It is how you come through this. And if you don't come through this with the right attitude and with a feeling of gratitude, you're going to be spiritually dead. And I'm worried about that for you. You're no special, more special than anybody else. This is just your cross to bear. This is your journey. Everyone has one. So why not you? Stop saying that. You have so much to be grateful for. So she goes, instead of waking up in the morning saying, why not me? I want you to wake up every morning and write down 10 things that you are grateful for. You have so much. So I started doing that. You have a house. You have food. You have a daughter. You have family that loves you. You have friends. You have a job that you are thriving at. So much to be grateful for. When you start focusing on all that you have to be grateful for, then your whole mindset changes. You know?
Friends, we've got about 5 minutes. Are there questions that you would like to ask Keisha? Yes, ma'am, Andrea.
And thank you for telling my story.
Yes, sir.
Just to be clear, prayer and stopping works.
So you can hear that prayer and stalking does work. We're not going to recommend that as a discipleship pattern at South Main, but yes. Other questions? Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
How do you navigate, like, talking about your Christian religions with coworkers in the professional world?
You know, I do defense work, and so, you know, you have to be very careful, but I have found that I often counsel my clients, and we talk about God quite a bit. Back in the holding cell, you know, or out, sometimes you will know if someone's a believer, and we'll talk about God and Christ, and they'll ask me to pray for them. So that's quite common. So I don't have any reservations, but you know, I am particular about when I do and whom I do to.
Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Tell us about your new Sunday school class you're starting.
Another one.
I didn't ask her to ask that question.
So after the divorce, I found that I did not have a place to fit in South Main, and I wanted Abra to still go to Sunday school. So I visited a few Sunday school classes, but I just couldn't find a fit. A lot of them are couple driven, or a lot of them were, you know, in a generation that I'm at yet, hopefully will be. You know, it's just I couldn't find a fit. So I started teaching immature children's ministry because, you know, Abra needs to go to Sunday school. But I wrote a letter, an email to Matt after having dinner with Larissa and Courtney, and because we were all kind of in that season, and I wrote a letter, and this is again how our church works. I mean, the next day they were like, okay, let's start it. Let's see what we can do. Let's start thinking about this, brainstorming it. So now we're starting a new class. The date that we're going to begin is September 15th, and it's for people who are single, widowed, married, but your spouse does not attend South Main, divorced, and 30s through 50s, just for a place for us to all come together and have a space for ourselves. So I'm very grateful for that.